number two of Sports 180, remembering the life of Tennessee legend John Majors. And we're pleased to bring on the Stanley Fenton Gates Hotline, the one and only Chris Lowe. Chris, great article, I guess kind of an obituary on ESPN.com that you penned earlier today on Coach Majors. But thanks for joining us. What was it like putting that piece together? I know somebody that you had admired and liked covering during your time.
Well, Heather, thanks for having me on, first of all, to talk about Coach Majors. We're actually working on some more pieces on Coach Majors where we've talked to a bunch of people. The one that's up now, ESPN, is just sort of the straight obit. And I've had a chance to talk to several people who coached with and played for him, which is, it's always great to hear stories about him, because there was no better storyteller than Coach Majors. And if you ever were fortunate enough to be around him, you hear stories from the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s. I mean, every decade he had you covered. But, he was my coach. He was, when I was in school at Tennessee in the 80s, he was the head football coach there. And I had a chance to get to know Coach Majors very well. A lot of stories, a lot of personal stories. One I'll share with you, in, I guess, 85 or 86, right towards the end of my college career, Tennessee was recruiting a kid from here in Knoxville, Leroy Thompson, great football player. He went on to go to Penn State, but he was interested in communications and the broadcast part of school. So he came over during his visit to visit the student publications office, the Daily Beacon, and some of those things. And they had asked me to sort of be the person. At the time, I can't remember if I was the sports editor of the Daily Beacon. I was certainly working there. But they asked me to sort of be the liaison to help explain some of the technology there to him and what we did. I remember there were several coaches with him as he came there in the student publications office, and he was a big-time recruit. Now, as it turned out, they didn't get him. He went to Penn State. But I'll never forget, even though they didn't get him, Coach Majors wrote me a handwritten note thanking me for my time and in his words, your loyalty to the University of Tennessee. And I've always thought about that, and that's always been a special. I wish I'd have kept the letter like a dummy. I didn't keep it. But he wrote me a note thanking me for taking the time and being there and doing my part to help the football program. And that's who he was. I talked to Charles Davis the other day. Charles said it best. He said, John Majors was Tennessee, and Tennessee was him. And I remind people this all the time. And it didn't end the way Coach Majors or fans or anybody over there wanted it to end. It was a messy divorce, and we all know about it. And I don't think now's the time or place to get into all what did or didn't happen. But one thing that's absolutely not for debate is Coach John Majors came back to Tennessee when Tennessee needed him. He won a national championship in 1976 at Pittsburgh and had the talent to win a lot more. And came back to Tennessee when Tennessee was dead in the water and struggling, came back to his alma mater, and it took him a while, but he got him back. And I'll never forget being in New Orleans in 1985. I guess it was 86 when the game was played. I was a junior in college. And of all the Tennessee sporting events I've been around and covered, and there's been a ton of them because I'm just old now, nothing is dearer to my heart than that 1985 season, really, and the Sugar Bowl win over Miami, and being there in New Orleans and being in the Superdome and experiencing that. And that was the game, and that was the season, really, that brought Tennessee football back. And I think Tennessee fans everywhere will always be indebted, and that's why Coach Majors has endeared himself to so many people in and around the state.
Chris, appreciation, that respect for the media, so unique. Can you talk about that a little bit more, even if it's just other things you witness, and how he really got it in terms of what everybody was doing to cover the program and how that benefited the university in the big picture?
Well, I mean, anybody that really had many dealings with Coach Majors, whether you're in the media, whether you're a trainer, a student assistant. He treated everybody sort of the same way. You know, sometimes he'd be gruff with you, but, you know, he would do his best to try to get to know your name. And Coach Majors was so much more than a football coach, Vince. I mean, he loved opera. Every year when he would go up to the National Football Foundation, the College Football Hall of Fame Awards, he would always go to a play in New York City. He'd always tell me about one he saw. And that was terrible. It was terrible. I wouldn't go back. And some he loved. You know, he'd tell you all about it. But I remember he would call me back when I first got to Tennessee and was covering the program for the Tennessean. And gosh, even before I had a cell phone. And he would leave these long, rambling messages on my answering machine. And my wife, you know, who's not from Tennessee and didn't grow up in Tennessee, she said, Chris, a Coach Majors called you today and left a long message. And he'd be up in Washington, D.C. with his grandson, Brandon. This was years ago, now, keep in mind. And he'd give you his whole itinerary. We've been to the Smithsonian Institute. We've been to this museum, that museum. He was such a worldly Renaissance guy. I mean, he loved everything and was much, much more than just your typical, stereotypical football coach. And he could talk about anything. And that's what I always admired so much about him. Very much socially active. You know, even before, at a time when, you know, hardly very few football coaches, certainly in the South, were. And he was a guy that if you have any kind of Tennessee blood in you, if it's your alma mater, if you grew up here, if you work here, you know, you're proud to say that that Coach Majors was somebody that was a football coach for as long as he was, and a great player. Let's not forget, he was inducted in the College Football Hall player and should have won the Heisman Trophy. I know that's probably a phrase that Tennessee fans were repeating on multiple fronts forever, from now into eternity. You think about Peyton Manning in 97 and Coach Majors in 56 when he finished second. Paul Hornung. But it's hard to say the Majors' name, period. His dad, his brothers, his whole family, and not have it be just completely and totally intertwined with the entire state of Tennessee, the University of Tennessee, the Tennessee football program.
We're talking to ESPN reporter Chris Lowe. And Chris, we appreciate you joining us today on the life of John Majors. Was Coach Majors ever able to really put into words what it meant to come back to Tennessee after having played such an amazing All-American career at Tennessee and be able to lead the Vols to the Sugar Bowl win, to the three SEC titles, including going back-to-back in 89 and 90? I mean, was he ever really able to convey just what that felt like to him?
Yeah, you know, I talked to him about it some over the years. And again, the way it ended was such a disappointment. And there are a lot of really hurt, bitter emotional feelings on all sides when that happened. But no, Heather, he told me many times, that's why he came back. He came back because this was his home. You know, the guy, I bet he was 145 pounds soaking wet when he played, maybe 150 pounds, from Huntland, Tennessee. And, you know, to come back to his alma mater and lead him back to national prominence at a time, again, when the school needed him. And let's not forget, I think the year that's probably most underrated during his tenure in Tennessee is 88, because really they started out 0-6 that year. And there are a lot of calls, supporters, fans, media, for Tennessee to make a change. It was time to make a change, and he'd been there for 11 years, and even though they won the Sugar Bowl in 85, that, you know, 87 wasn't a great season. They turned it around that year, and this tells you a lot about his resilience and who he was. And won their last five games. That turnaround started a stretch where I think over the next 3.5 seasons they were something like 34-6-2 with two SEC titles. I mean, that's, again, that if you want to know who John Majors was, what he was about, and what coaching at Tennessee meant to him, there you go. Because that really started, that wave started Tennessee on its way. And then let's give Coach Moore a lot of credit. He picked it up and took it to another level. But John Majors left Philip Fulmer a great program. Not a good program, but a great program with a lot of talent. And again, to Coach Fulmer's credit, he took it to another level. But, you know, what he did, and the funny thing is, had he coached in this era, because, you know, his first few years, there wasn't a lot to write home about. 77, 78, 79, 80, 81. They were pretty average most of those years. And in this day and age, I don't know that he would have made it to 85 because everybody wants success right now, yesterday. You know, but he was able to bring in talented players from all over the country, and that's the thing about him. You look at his recruiting classes, and he was able to go all over the country, up to Ohio, out west, out the northeast, and get great football players, something that Tennessee has always done and continued to do, and set the tone. But I, it's cliche to talk about Mount Rushmores. I mean, we probably do it too much, those of us in the media. But boy, it's hard to have a Mount Rushmore at University of Tennessee and not have Coach Majors on it.
Chris, what else is important that you want fans to know about Coach Majors that maybe either wasn't appreciated about or you really want to emphasize in your experiences with him?
Well, he was awfully loyal to his players, you know, and his players are loyal to him. I've heard from several of them today. Keith DeLong, Charles Davis, Bruce Wilkerson, guys that played for him right on down through, you know, from when he first got there all the way to the end. And he took pride in, again, Heather, to your question of being back at his school and bringing players that maybe didn't grow up in Tennessee and grew up in different cultures and different parts of the country and indoctrinating them, you know, to the traditions and the pageantry and everything that goes into Tennessee football. And I think that's the thing about him. And just the stories, Vince. My boys were younger then, but we went to a Tennessee baseball game several years ago. We sat out there on the left field porch that they have on the outfield now. Coach Major showed up that day, and he brought a newspaper, sat down and started reading the newspaper. And I introduced my boys to him, and he started telling stories. He started in the 50s. He went from the 50s to the 60s to the 70s to the 80s. And he ended with that 1980 game. I think the year they played the open season against Georgia and a guy by the name of Herschel Walker. And all these years later, he still talked about a two-point play. Tennessee went for two early in that game and didn't get it. And to this day, he thinks that sort of set the wrong tone in that game. And he said, you know, if I had it to do over again, I never would have done it. And he feels like that's sort of what set the tone for Tennessee not winning that game. But he was a great storyteller. And his mind, I mean, he could remember things from the 50s when he played and the 60s and the 70s. And think about the coaches on his coaching tree, guys. People that coached not only at Tennessee but Iowa State, coached under him at Pittsburgh. You're talking Jimmy Johnson, John Gruden, David Cutcliffe, Philip Fulmer, Ron Zook. I mean, you can go on and on and on. Kevin Steele, Lovie Smith, Tree. 33 former assistants that coached under Coach Majors went on to be head coaches, either at the collegiate or pro level. But his coaching tree is as impressive as anybody's out there.
And we were talking about it with Jimmy Himes. Not the easiest guy to work for. Very demanding.
No. A lot of turnover on his staff. Rarely. You go back at Tennessee, Heather. Rarely did they bring back staffs intact. You know, he wasn't easy to work for. He'll tell you that. But a lot like Nick Saban. Nick Saban's not easy to work for. I mean, he's had a lot of turnover here more of a modern time with his coaching staff. But typically guys like that, they're always looking to get better. They're always looking to sort of move the needle and tweak this and tweak that. And he could be very difficult to work for. And if you ever had the opportunity to go to one of their practices, he'd stand up there in that coaching tower, Coach Majors would, with that big bullhorn, the megaphone. And you could, half the time you couldn't understand what he was saying because the megaphone wasn't real clear. But you knew when he was on your behind. And I remember the players saying, if you saw him come down those circular stairs almost in a sprint and get to the bottom, he'd sort of be out of breath. And if you saw him coming after your position group, you just hung your head because you knew you were about to get it. And typically, it wasn't just the players, but it was the position coach that got it too. And but I could still hear him, attack, attack, attack. I mean, that was sort of his thing over and over again. And so many stories. I could sit here for hours and talk to you about Coach Majors. Mm-hmm. And we're just so I was so blessed to have grown up in the era in the SEC when you had coaches like that. You know, Pat Dye, we just lost Pat Dye a few days ago at Auburn. You know, Bear Bryant, John Majors, Vince Dooley. And of course, Spurrier comes to Florida in 1990. But the 70s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, when you look at the lineup of football coaches in the SEC, I mean, you talk about giants. There were tons of giants. And Coach Majors was certainly one of them.
Chris Lowe of ESPN and ESPN.com. Chris, thank you so much. On the way out, though, I want to ask you, what do you think Johnny Majors would have been like coaching in the Twitter era?
Well, first of all, as I said earlier, Heather, he would have been able to talk about a lot more than just football. He would have weighed in on just about everything because he knew a little bit about everything and wasn't uncomfortable talking about everything. So his Twitter account, I would say, would have been pretty interesting. And I don't know that it would have been pretty unfiltered too. Because in my time of being around Coach Majors and talking to him, you know, he usually said what was on his mind and didn't really care if he stepped on toes.
All right, thanks so much, Chris. We really appreciate you taking the time today. Thank you.
You bet. It was a pleasure.
That's Chris Lowe of ESPN, ESPN.com. Said he's working on a piece. He does have a great obituary written up at ESPN.com right now, and then check out what he's got coming down the pipeline today on their website. And just so much fun to revisit history with Chris, with Jimmy. Looking forward to talking to some of the players that played under Johnny Majors, and then hearing what I know Sports Talk is going to have an incredible lineup and just close out the rest of the week. And if you missed it earlier, Eric Ainge had a couple of great interviews, including Bob Kessling, voice of the Vols. He was on the EA show. You can find all of that at 991thesportsanimal.com. Appreciate Chris jumping on the Stanley Fenton Gates hotline for us. We'll take your phone calls, 656-9900, star 990. What was your favorite memory of Johnny Majors as we celebrate 85 years of Coach Majors being with us as he passed earlier today? We'll be back with more Sports 180 on the Sports Animal.
Two Sports Animal OGs have teamed up for the next phase of Sports 180. Now back to the show. Here's Josh Ward and Heather Harrington.
star 990 is a free call for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. We're going to go to the phones in just a second, but we've got to get Alex Abernathy from News Talk 98.7 on for our daily COVID-19 update. Good afternoon, Alex.
Good afternoon, guys. I'll start with a quick rundown of the new numbers. The Knox County Health Department has released the latest COVID-19 numbers. We have 441 confirmed cases of COVID-19 in the county. That is an increase of 8 from yesterday. 101 cases are active. That is also an increase of 8 from yesterday. 335 people have recovered, and that means we've gone a handful of days in a row now without a new recovery. There is one person currently hospitalized with COVID-19. That is no change from yesterday. And 5 deaths are connected with the coronavirus. We haven't seen a death in over 2 weeks now. We just wrapped up with the KCHD health briefing. Martha Buchanan was the one who was speaking today. She is the director of the Knox County Health Department, and she addressed the increase in cases. We talked yesterday about how we expected her to talk about it a little bit today. She attributed the increase in cases to a couple of different things. First, she said, first off, this was expected. We've been told for the last 2 weeks that this was expected, that we would eventually start seeing an increase in cases. And she attributed that partially to the reopening, which is fair, she said, as people get out and about. Like I said, they expected to see more cases. She also attributed it to more testing, which is also something we've been told for a while now. KCHD, as well as really the entire state of Tennessee, has really ramped up their testing, so much so to where we were called by Harvard the best testing state in the country right now. So the increase in cases might not actually be a bad thing, because if anything, it means they are finding these cases that a month ago they might not have been able to find, which means they're able to protect more people, protect more loved ones. So increase of cases, is concerning, but can also be a bit of a good sign depending on how you look at it. She said, as of right now, there's no change in the guidance that is being suggested by the Knox County Health Department because of the increase in cases. And also, I know, Heather, yesterday you asked a question about whether or not they're considering returning to phase two, or returning to phase one, should I say, or maybe even lengthening phase two. She answered that question directly today, and, well, I say directly, she really kind of bounced around it. She said they're going to have to make the decision along with local leadership, but as she finished answering the question, she turned the tide and really talked about more so they're looking towards phase three. They want to know what they can do to safely reopen in phase three, and that's what they're focused on now, not a return to phase one and potentially lengthening phase two. Last thing she covered was she really stressed that if you feel like you have a symptom of COVID-19, they want you to go get tested. That's part of this expanded testing. They have plenty of capacity to test anybody who wants to go get a test. And she said those symptoms have been expanded. So she ran through a quick list for us. I'll read it to you now. She said the ones that we already knew, that's fever, cough, shortness of breath, fatigue, headache. Those were the ones that we've kind of been told for a long time. She added, though, loss of smell or taste and then nausea/vomiting are also symptoms that they've had with COVID-19. So all of those mean you may have it, you may just have a common cold, but she said if you have those, there is no harm in going and getting a free test. If anything, it just helps everybody else. So that's today's update, guys. As always, you can go over to our website, check it out, newstalk987.com. We'll have the statewide numbers coming up a little after 3 o'clock and all the updates you need all day long.
All right. Thank you so much, Alex Abernathy. We appreciate you keeping us up to date.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. That's Alex Abernathy, Newstalk 98.7. Before we go to break, though, Todd, he's been holding. He wants to reflect on Coach Johnny Majors. Todd, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Got a couple quick stories. One, I went to high school with Todd Kirk that played center on those 85 Sugar Bowl team. He started for 3 years there. So we followed them all over. We went to the Alabama game that year, and Todd's brother and I said, if Tennessee wins, we're gonna run out on the field. Well, Van Tiffin missed the long field goal. Tennessee won. We go running out on the field and have to dodge a couple Alabama state troopers, but I get up there where Todd was, and he asked if I want to go in the dressing room with him. I said, yeah. So we go in, and all the players are chanting, you know, jerseys. They wanted to keep their jerseys. And Coach Major said, well, if you'll shut up and let me talk, you can keep your jersey. So he finally got them under control and spoke to them for a little while. But few years later, they were honoring the Sugar Bowl teams and SEC title teams, 89-90 and the 85 Sugar Bowl team. And we were down on the field again, and Coach Majors was standing right next to me. It was just super nice. But when they introduced a lot of people, when they got to Coach Majors, he was by far the loudest ovation. I mean, people just went crazy. And it was just amazing that how the Tennessee fans just were so caught up with the emotion when they introduced his name. It's like they just scored a touchdown or something. But people just loved him, as everybody knows. And also, I wanted to say some friends of mine went to a coaching clinic at Tennessee about 10, 12 years ago. They said they were watching video in their hotel room and had the TV on, a bunch of coaches, and said somebody was banging on the wall, and one of the guys stepped out and said this guy told him he needed to turn their TV down. And so he went back in, and a few minutes later he did it again, and my buddy Jeff said, there's some old man out here with his shirt off that's telling us to turn the TV down. So they turned it down again. Next morning they were checking out of the hotel, and my buddy said, there's that guy that was telling us to turn the TV down. And the head coach said, that's Coach Majors. And so Jason went over and got his autograph, and he got his autograph for me. And I'm just looking at it this morning. He wrote out a real nice thing. But just a great guy, and a lot of good memories when he was coaching there.
That is awesome. Great story, Todd, and treasure that signature. I know Johnny Majors, his signature, very unique, beautiful penmanship, so that's definitely a treasure to hold on to. Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you.
656-9900, star 990 is a free call for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. We'll go back to the phones. If you have a Coach Majors memory, we'd love to hear it from you today as we reflect on the life of Johnny Majors, a true Tennessee legend. We'll be back with more Sports 180 and head back to the phones on the Sports Animal.
This is VFL Josh Malone, and we're counting it down. It is just
94 days until
it's football time in Tennessee.
This Sports Radio WNML Countdown to Kickoff is brought to you by Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Find out more at tvacreditunion.com.
Go home!
Star 990 is a free call for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. We're going to be joined in just a few minutes by Bill Bender of the Sporting News. But back to the phones we go, where Tom is waiting. Good afternoon, Tom.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. So I was curious. I read today Dollywood actually plans to reopen in a week and a half. And, you know, I'm definitely one of the people who think good for them. But I'm a season pass holder, and I know it's going to be too hot to wear a mask. Yeah, at all there, because, I mean, unlike Disney World, where you've got a lot of air conditioning that Dollywood doesn't, which brings me to my question, which is, do we think they're actually going to allow fans in Neyland by at all this season? Because I'm curious, because, I believe if they did, they would have to require a mask and probably limited seating, which means, you know, maybe, like, season ticket holders could only go to, like, select games, you know, based on where they're sitting. But is it even going to be worth trying to go through all that?
All right. Hey, we appreciate the phone call. As of right now, Tennessee has not announced a plan to have fans in Neyland Stadium, but I know Iowa State was a school that came out last week that they are going to sell their season tickets at a 50% capacity. I would imagine that is what SEC schools are working on, because 50,000 fans is better than zero fans. So I would imagine that whenever Tennessee does roll out any sort of possibilities to buy tickets, it will go to season ticket holders first, and they will most likely take up all those tickets, but that has not been formally announced yet. We're pleased to be welcomed by Bill Bender of Sporting News. And Bill, what are your thoughts on seeing fans at football games this fall?
I think the 50% number would be probably the sweet spot if we can actually get fans in. I know there are a lot of fan concerns about COVID tests. You mentioned all who's getting those tickets. Is it the season ticket holders? How many students are going to be let in? And there's a lot to go with that. But, you know, all things are trending in the right direction. I think at the end of the day, we'll probably have some measure of fans in the stands if they can get the proper testing done.
Myself personally, I'm just worried about tailgating. Like, please just let people tailgate, because that's one of the most fun aspects of college football. I know that might be selfish, but my family really enjoys it.
I think we all do. I mean, that's part of the scene and the pageantry of college football. I mean, college football might be affected by this the most, Heather, just from the standpoint, you know, a professional game, yeah, there's tailgating and those kind of things, but it's a pretty corporate atmosphere. There's no atmosphere quite like college football. Been fortunate enough to be to some games down there at Tennessee, and that's a spectacle that's as good as any. And to not have that across 130 college campuses would be a bad thing.
Bill, we've lost a couple of legendary coaches here this week. Obviously, Johnny Majors, that we've been reacting to today, earlier, Pat Dye from Auburn, and it's interesting that those two had the rivalry that they did. Just give me a quick thought on those two legendary coaches in the SEC and beyond.
Well, I mean, I grew up in Big Ten country, right? So to us growing up, the SEC wasn't what it is today. And I'm not insulting the SEC at all. I'm just saying the sport back in the 80s was probably more regionalized than it is now. So guys like Johnny Majors and Pat Dye, they stuck out. The fact that I knew who they were, that I knew, you know, they had that big rivalry, that, you know, the SEC championships he won, what Pat Dye did for the Iron Bowl, that shows how iconic those two were. And to lose those two in the same week is just awful. And you read and hear stories about them and what they meant to their programs. As for Majors, I'm trying to think of a coach that means as much to two programs as he does. He won that national title at Pitt and then did everything he did for Tennessee. I think the best modern-day example I can find of that might be Mack Brown.
Oh, that's interesting. What draws you to that comparison? What do you think are the similarities there?
Well, I mean, nice guys, obviously. Mack Brown's one of the nice guys in the sport, obviously, and he's doing well at North Carolina. I mean, the fact that Majors won the national championship at Pitt, and that's a team that's still very celebrated, and then he goes to Tennessee, and what he's done for that university, kind of a figurehead. And, you know, not to keep harping on the 80s, but a lot of these guys, like Majors set the stage for Fulmer, much like a Bo Schembechler set the stage for Lloyd Carr and everything that follows there. You could say the same about Woody Hayes at Ohio State, Pat Dye at Auburn. Like I said, interesting stat about him, I looked this up. So if you take 1980 to the present day, the year before Dye got to Auburn, Auburn and Alabama are tied at 20-20. Before that, it was all Bear Bryant. So, I mean, that's the impact he had on that program.
Yeah, and then I guess doing it at two different programs as well, North Carolina and Texas as well. That's part of that comparison, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Mack's done a great job in North Carolina, and now he's doing it again. You know, I mean, some of the teams that are really tearing it up on the recruiting trail right now, C1, North Carolina, USC's having a good week, and these are programs that have kind of tried to find their place in recent seasons, Tennessee and USC in particular, and I think that recruiting is going to show up. You know, that's why you guys are a little more excited about football down there than, at least I'm detecting that, than you have in recent seasons, and I think it's because some of the work on the recruiting trail that Jeremy Pruitt has done.
Yeah, Bill, I don't know if it's the coronavirus impact and the fact that we're just all wanting real sports to get back so badly, or because of that recruiting prowess. I mean, we have Vol fans that are watching video game simulations of Tennessee, like competing for a national title, and people are eating it up. I mean, they are just starved right now for football season to roll around.
I think we all are. I mean, you can only watch so many old games. I mean, there's been some good ones on. For me, it's been a process, you know, just trying to come up with content along the way. I mean, The Last Dance was a nice save for all of us because I got a lot of much content out of that. But, I mean, everybody's beginning slowly. I've been telling people here in Ohio, we started the youth baseball thing. And, you know, the hard part here, and it kind of translates to college football for me, coaching 9-year-olds, I like giving kids high fives. I like hugging kids. I mean, you can't do it. And it's really hard. And I was thinking about it, like, so Tennessee scores a touchdown on the opening drive. Are they allowed to hug each other? What happens next? And I think these are kind of just weird questions that lead me to believe we still have a long way to go to get there, but I think we're headed in the right direction.
Well, maybe that elbow thing where you're bumping elbows now will catch on, although that could lead to more problems. Who knows? Bill Bender from Sporting News joining us right now. Bill, we've seen a lot of preseason predictions come out. I know some different publications have put theirs out. When you're looking at Tennessee going into year number three with Jeremy Pruitt, I know it's been a kooky offseason. I think the safe pick for the Vols, and the majority of people are going to pick 8-4. If you were going to lean one way or another, would you lean more towards a 9-3 year for Jeremy Pruitt or a 7-5 if I took 8-4 off the table?
Probably, I would probably go the max route and say they go get 9 somehow and maybe beat Florida or Georgia along the way, because that's what they're going to have to do. I mean, it comes down to Florida, Georgia, Alabama, three games that they've struggled with, three programs that they measure themselves against. And, I mean, for these expectations to become real, you've got to start beating those three. And I think Tennessee is going to be a pretty consensus pick to finish third in the East, maybe fourth if you want to put Kentucky ahead of them. But I think for Tennessee to accomplish those goals, they've got to beat Kentucky, Vandy, South Carolina, and who am I leaving? Mizzou. I always leave out Mizzou. I apologize. But you got to sweep those and then do what you can in the crossovers. Take care of your non-con, and you can get to 8 or 9 wins.
Bill, is there a sleeper type of college football playoff pick that you would look at? Someone that, you know, we don't see there on a regular basis that you might have identified as someone that could kind of get into the mix?
Well, not really. That's the problem, Vince. I can't force the shot, right? Like,
right.
I there's some programs I'm watching that, you know, like a Penn State or Oregon or Florida. If Florida can finally beat Georgia, can they slip in maybe? I mean, those are three of the hot picks. A lot of people are on Oklahoma State and Arizona State. That's about as far off the radar as I would go. But I think if I absolutely had to go off the radar, it'd probably be Oklahoma State just because of the offense they return. You know, maybe they slip by Oklahoma and Texas and win the Big 12. And Mike Gundy's had some teams do that in the past, but it's really hard to put that on a Big 12 school given how every year those schools typically lose one they shouldn't. And that's how you get yourself out of the playoff.
Hey, you being in Ohio, Bill, the biggest thing is everybody is expecting now. It seems like there's a huge groundswell for Ryan Day to legitimately compete for a national championship this year. Can you feel that? And is that too soon? Is that too much of a lofty expectation on him in year two?
Not at all. I mean, last year was maybe their best team that I can remember in years. And, I mean, a lot of that was Urban, you know, and Urban's influence. But I think what he's done, Heather, is he's taken what Urban's done, kind of enhanced it in some ways. They're still recruiting at a very high level. I mean, a lot of Buckeye fans feel like they should have, would have, could have beat Clemson if not for some bad calls, and there's some validity to that. They'll be right back in the mix. I think the thing with the Big Ten is there is a huge separation from Ohio State and that next tier of the Michigan, Wisconsin, Penn State grouping. I don't see anybody else winning the Big Ten other than Ohio State, much like I don't see anybody else other than Clemson winning the ACC, and I think that's half your playoff field.
Bill, you guys did your predictions, your bowl predictions that are way too early, and you have Ohio State there in the national title against Clemson. What do you think about that matchup with Clemson having lost Justin Ross for the season?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough blow. I mean, did you think all of my bowl predictions were 100% right? Like, that's the 44 matchups. No questions asked. No, because people do get – they get fired up about them. I get so much hate mail for those. But, you know, I think Ohio State and Clemson, probably the odds-on favorite to get there. I mean, Alabama, good bet. They've got a ton of talent coming back. But they also, again, that's the trick with being Alabama. There's more playoff contenders in the SEC than any other conference. I mean – Georgia's playoff contender, Florida, Auburn, LSU. I mean, all of these schools are definitely playoff contenders, and it's going to make it tough for Alabama to get back.
Bill Bender,
Tennessee and Louisville in the Taxler Gator Bowl. Sorry, just wanted to put that out there.
That'd be a fun game if you had Tennessee playing Louisville and Scott Satterfield. Satterfield's done a nice job at Louisville, and that would be a step up for Tennessee as well. So if they get to that 9-win mark, they're probably going to be playing in one of those nationally televised bowls that we actually care about. Also, there's 44 bowl games on that schedule. That's, some of the bowl names give me a headache just reading them out loud.
Yeah, and who knows if we'll even make it to bowl season, but I like the bold prediction. I feel like just putting those bowl predictions out was bold.
Yeah, I mean, again, yeah, there's so many. There is a chance with the way the world we live in now that some of those bowls don't happen, you know, and some of these lower group of five schools may not even be playing. You never know. So I don't think college football is going to look like what we typically expect out of it. But at the same time, I think we're going to have it in some form. There's too much momentum in that direction for me not to believe that. I'm just hoping they can get the logistics down of working out, making it safe, and, again, continuing to drop the COVID numbers, not to mention – you know, what we're dealing with in our country right now with some of the divide, the protests, and some horrible events that have happened in the last couple weeks.
Yeah, I think everybody is just trying to manage everything right now and hoping that things just don't get any worse, because 2020, a tough year for a lot of people already.
Yeah, and well, football could be a great unifier for all of us. I always point back to, you know, probably the most significant event in my lifetime before the last couple months was definitely September 11th. And football was a big part of this country kind of unifying at the time. I remember the pageantry when the college football came back and the NFL. And, you know, we all talk about George Bush throwing that pitch at Yankee Stadium. And maybe college football plays a huge role in that, because nothing to me unifies people more than 100,000 people at Neyland or the Shoe or Big House and, you know, rooting for the sport that we all love.
Hey, Bill Bender of Sporting News, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. We always appreciate it when you are able to hop on with us. Thank you.
Hey, no problem, guys. Take care. Be safe. I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thanks, you as well. Bill Bender from the Sporting News joining us on the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline. When we come back, kind of reset some news today. We'll take your phone calls as well, reflecting on the Tennessee legend, Johnny Major. 656-9900, star 990 is a free call for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. More Sports 180 on The Sports Animal.
Turn us up and embarrass the Alabama fan that sits in the next cubicle. This is 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Coach Majors, I mean, his passion was for, you know, for football was just very high. He played football. He understood football. He coached it. He taught it. And he just demanded just that. He taught us that discipline, you know, the attention to detail, and it carried over. I mean, one of the main lessons that I'm never going to forget about Coach Majors was he would always say, always be 5 minutes early for everything and anything. And even to this day, I mean, if you tell me 10 o'clock, you know, I'm there at 9:55.
Remembering a Tennessee legend, John Majors, today, and we appreciate you, Sam, for putting that audio together. That was Carl Pickens earlier today on the Eric Ains Show. You can hear that entire interview as well as everybody reflecting on Coach Majors at 99.1thesportsanimal.com. I'm Heather Harrington along with Vince Ferrara. We've talked to Jimmy Himes about Coach Majors today, also Chris Lowe. I know Bob Kessling was on the air earlier talking to the EA show, and there's a lot of great memories being shared today. We encourage you, if you have a memory, 656-9900, you can call and share it with us. And Vince, it's just been interesting hearing so many different perspectives, especially from journalists like Jimmy and Chris Lowe, both commending Johnny Majors for how he was to cover as a head coach in the SEC and what a working relationship he had with the media, because I would say that's also a bygone era when it comes to how things are handled today.
Yeah, Chris told a great story about him coming down from his practice perch and he could see him on the run and yelling attack, attack, attack to go get on a position coach. And Jimmy talked about how he would tell Coach Majors that, hey, you're too hard on your assistants. And they had that relationship where Jimmy could mention something like that, but it wasn't the end of the world. Coach Majors felt like he's not going to apologize about being demanding for his with his coaches, but then would later say, yeah, I was probably too hard on that guy. You just don't see that with the media today, that kind of open relationship. It's a different time, a different world, I know, but that was really one of the many neat things about him and one of the unique things about him as well.
Yeah, I think you're right. And the fact that he was able to spend so much time every single week with sports talk, as Jimmy was talking about, for four straight years and just giving his analysis on what was going on in college football and showing his personality, because I think that was one of the best things about Coach Majors is he had an incredible memory with just such a big attention to detail. And then he was able to really showcase that with a lot of personality and still stay very current and very up to date. I mean, you knew he was watching a lot of football even when he got into his 80s.
Absolutely. And he could still, and John and Jimmy would talk to him about it. And I was very, very fortunate to fill in for those guys a lot in those years that they had Coach Majors on. So I was lucky to be a part of some of those shows. And you just listen to his stories. You're hanging on every word. And he would recall detail but still be able to look at today's team with his football mind and be able to accurately talk about, you know, what's happening, whether it was with the quarterback or what they were doing offensively, not trying to be critical or being the, you know, one that was criticizing the current coach, but he could still point out things about the current team, even in his 80s, and just the recall was amazing. Also, how often Jimmy would really, you know, work hard to schedule and let Coach Majors know that they were on remote and, Coach, need you to be here. We're going to be here at this place. Here's the address. Here are the directions, Coach. Jimmy worked real hard to help him out with that. But then oftentimes Coach Majors would be honored by Iowa State and Pitt seemingly monthly. So sometimes
he was always having to call in.
Yeah, it was amazing. Like all the time someone's having him out to honor a certain year's teams, and he coached a lot of them through the years at Iowa State and Pitt and then at Tennessee. So just amazing how busy he stayed just reflecting on his time in football. Just his mind was so impressive.
Yeah, definitely was. 656-9900, star 990 is a free call for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. We're going to keep remembering the life of Johnny Majors, playing career at Tennessee, coaching career at different stops around the country before returning to Tennessee to solidify them as an SEC power. That is definitely what he was able to do. And the rest since 1992 is history. And Tennessee has been able to really solidify itself in the college football vernacular when it comes to traditions, being a powerhouse program. And that's the task that Jeremy Pruitt has been given, is to also restore Tennessee to that former glory. So we'll take your phone calls. We've got the face-off coming up in just a few minutes as well. This is Sports 180 on the Sports Animal.